Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another programme from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archives.
Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International Service. Marks on Mechanics. Jonathan Marks investigates objects mechanical. In this second episode, the focus is on bells in the belfry.
Hello and welcome to an outside broadcast. I'm standing in front of one of the two remaining bell foundries in the Netherlands. This one's called Petit en Fritsen and it's located in a beautiful quaint town of Aarle-Rixdal. Don't try looking for it on the map though, it's only just on this detailed road map in front of me. Let's just say it's around 20 minutes drive from the city of Eindhoven in the south of the Netherlands. Now, if you wander around many Dutch cities, especially on market day, you'll often hear melodies being played on bells coming from the church tower. They're performed on an instrument that's known as a carillon. More modern versions of the same idea are found right across the globe, in Akita City Shopping Mall in Japan, at the University of Connecticut in the USA. Well, I could recite their entire order book of several hundred projects, all made here in this quaint little village. Many of the carillons are now automatic, played by a computer chip and programmed by telephone. Stay with us for an explanation as to how that's done. Jan Zoudervaart, sales manager for the company, is our first guide.
A bit of history, I think, to start with. I mean, this is a very old family concern, isn't it?
Yes, we are going back to the 17th century. In 1660, this company was established. Then, at that time, the bell founders were traveling bell founders. They went from one church to another one. They had not that much work to do so that they could establish themselves at one place and work from there. No, they had to go from one church in a village to another church. They collected the material, the bronze and the tin, from the citizens. And when they had enough, they already prepared the mold for the bell, of course. They built a furnace for the bronze to be melted. And at that particular time, they cast the bell or the bells. They hoisted up in the tower and then they left the place for another job at another place.
Now, at the moment, we're on the second floor of the foundry. In fact, there's a window. We can hear bells being hit in the background. So, obviously, things have changed. I mean, you're in one place now.
Yes, as a matter of fact, that's correct. In the 18th century, one of the descendants of this family decided that he had work enough, and he had, as a matter of fact, to establish in one place. And so he did, but this is already the third and probably the last settlement of the bell foundry here in Aarle-Rixdal.
Now, your sales manager for the company, is it mainly churches that are buying the bells?
No, not anymore. This was in the late 50s that we concluded that the churches were more broken down than that they were new built. So that particular market was decreasing a lot. We then determined to find another market, and we found that in the small chimes, as we call it, the small carillons, for jewelry shops, for shopping center, for universities, for town halls. They were more appropriate for that kind of small carillons.
And is it a worldwide market?
Yes, almost every country in the world, except then for Africa, where the religion doesn't allow any bells. We are selling our bells everywhere, yes. Yeah, yeah. From Alaska to the Philippines.
In fact, in Washington, D.C., USA, not far down the road to National Airport, is a sign saying Netherlands Carillon. That was the result of a joint project between three Dutch bell foundries. One made the supporting structure, the other the bells, and one of them the striking mechanism. One of those Dutch foundries has since gone out of business, leaving two family firms who are in direct competition. With such a specialised product, you can imagine that competition is quite fierce.
There are only four major bell foundries left in the world, so there's not much competition.
And one of them's here in Holland?
Yes, that our most severe competitor is located only 15 kilometers from here.
And the other two are where?
There's one which could be compared with us in the United Kingdom, and one in the south of France.
And together you decide really how bells are going to sound right around the world?
More or less, with that remark that the Dutch bell founders are still pioneering. They did that a long time ago and they still do that. Not so for the France and the British foundries.
With more traditional types, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There have been some experiments with different types of bells. One, which is jokingly called a pregnant bell because of its shape, has a very different kind of characteristics from a standard carillon bell. It's made by the other bell foundry in Holland, so perhaps, naturally, Jan Zoudervaart is somewhat reserved about it.
It was specially developed by the other Dutch bell foundry, with a major third in it, giving the bell Coca-Cola bottle shape.
Now, how do you tune a bell? You've got the foundry here divided into two parts. On one side, you've got the foundry where you're actually casting the bells, mm-hmm. and here on this side, you're actually finishing them off, I guess.
Yes. Maybe it's wise to mention before that when we are molding a bell and casting it afterwards, we already take into account that later on we have to remove some metal from the bell in order to get the proper tone in it. That also means that the bell which is cast is heavier than it should be. And at that time when it has been polished, the bell is, so to say, connected to an electronic device. And with that device we can exactly see on a certain point where a certain note should sound, what deviation there is.
You mean actually by hitting the bell and
by
watching
hitting
it?
The bell, yes, and then the sound of the bell is, of course, translated into frequencies. The frequencies are made visible on that electronic device, and we can see on a certain spot of the bell what has to be removed, what is too much on metal.
Okay, you've got a certain bell that you would say is, for example, a C bell, but will you get a different sound depending on where on the bell you hit it?
Yes, there are a number of notes, of tones in a bell, of which we are tuning five. We tune the hem note, we tune the fundamental, we tune the minor third, not the major third, but the minor third. We have the nominal, and that combination has to be tuned that exact that we can say, okay, we have a bell which is tuned as exactly as 100th of a semitone.
That really is.
It is remarkable, but with the help of the electronic devices, it's not simple, but it's to be done.
Now, chefs keep their secrets in terms of, you know, their recipes. Are there recipes that you are guarding, I mean, that you have to look after, like, for example, the alloy that you're using or how you tune it?
No. Just, I think the shape of the bell in combination with some parts of the treatment.
And is there a special alloy? What is it?
The bronze we are using is most of the time consisting of 80% copper and 20% tin. And there may be 1% of lead and 1% of zinc, but that's it.
The foundry also makes clocks and the heavy-duty standards needed to support the Carillion. They're custom-made to fit the project concerned.
I'm looking at, there's a rack of brochures in front of us here, and I see a picture of a truck with a Carillion on the back of it. What is that for?
Well, that's our travelling Carillion. When a certain committee wants to buy a Carillion, but they have no means to promote that, that they turn to the bell founder, and in that case we can put at their disposal our traveling Carillion, which has not only the manual playing equipment but also the automatic. Then the people can see with their own eyes the bells and the whole equipment, which is not possible in most of the times because the Carillions are up in the towers.
A sales manager, I guess, been around to various places around the world. What's been your most interesting order that you've had?
The sale of a Carillion to Korea, where the people in Seoul could not decide their melodies to be played, and they wouldn't like to use the Western-oriented melodies. And they just sent us a thick book with all kinds of Korean tunes, but also in the Korean language, which we couldn't read, of course. So we just picked out some pages and said, okay, we played melody according to page so and so. And we still don't know what melody has been played, what the title is.
There's also a photograph in the small museum you've got in the room next door of the Freedom Bell, or the Liberty Bell, isn't there?
Yeah, that's right.
What's that project?
We were honored 15 years ago by the American Legion, the veterans, to make a double-sized Liberty Bell because of the bicentennial in 1976. So we made a bell which has double the size, the diameter of the Liberty Bell, which means that if we have to bear in mind that the same note should be in the bell, although one octave lower, the original Liberty Bell weighing about 900 kilos, we had the Freedom Bell made of 7,500 kilos.
Well, let's go and see how you play the manual keyboard, so let's go downstairs.
All right.
We've come now to a glass house, as it were. We're actually in one of the Carillions. This is rather different to what you'd normally see in a church, isn't it?
Yes, in such a way that this particular instrument is used in our Bell Foundry to do all kinds of testings, new things, new inventions. We try it out here. For instance, the tension we need between the key of this instrument of the console and the connection to that with the clapper which is inside the bell.
So how do you play a carillon?
The carillioner, the man who's sitting at the bench before the console, is using his fists to play a melody, which is a rather physical job to do. He also is using, as a kind of accompanying of the melody, is using his feet with the pedals.
So you've got pedals here. If I push a pedal, what happens? I noticed that one of the keys on the keyboard moves as well.
Yeah, they are connected to one to another. So you cannot play them together. When you use your feet to strike a note, then it is the intention to use your fists striking the other notes.
Now, I hope I remember from my music lessons that you have 88 notes on a piano. What have you got here?
We have here 49 notes, 49 keys, and 18 pedals. But the pedals are, of course, connected to the keys. It's a 4-octave instrument, which is a middle large carillon. There are even carillons with 677 bells, but in order to play that correctly, you almost need a bicycle.
Simply because the keyboard's so large.
It's very large, yes.
Okay, what's your lowest note? Let's listen to that.
That's a C bell of 265 kilos. You can call that a rather light carillon. It's going from C, D, E, and then chromatic up to the high pitched C note.
And what's that one? This one here?
Yes, that's it.
What's that?
That's the high C, yes. Yeah.
Really is small. And how big is that bell?
That's a bell of 11 kilos. That's a rather small bell.
Still 11 kilos, it's pretty heavy.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Now, I notice on these keys, which indeed you have to bang with your fist, that there's a sort of ratchet system. If I turn, you can hear. What's that for?
That's correct. That is because every carillioner is used to play his own personal playing. For that reason, he needs to adjust the tension of the wire which connects the key to the clapper in the bell.
So some people bang the key harder than others, is that?
Yes, like that. That's great, yes.
Do you sell many carillons like this, in other words, with a manual keyboard?
No, they are rather expensive. You can have a carillon which costs about 150,000 guilders, up to 1,000,000 guilders.
And all that works out at around $500,000 US dollars. You can get cheaper systems which don't require a carillonneur to manually play the instrument. Instead, the bell is struck by an electromechanical system, and this is controlled by a small computer. The computer knows which tune to play thanks to an inbuilt chip. We now climb a metal staircase to visit a small room which uses a very different kind of technology to that on the factory floor. Rian Kuipers takes over as our guide.
Well, maybe you can hear a slight buzzing in the background now, because we come into a very interesting room which is actually full of electronic apparatus. In fact, the science behind all this. Computers in front of us. What do we need computers for?
Computers to arrange songs, to produce them, to program our computers for playing carillons. We record melodies with it.
So you're basically trying to replace the poor old carillonneur, are you?
That's not possible. There will always be some difference between music played from a machine and playing by carillonneurs.
That's interesting, because electronically there's no way that you can put that feeling in. In other words, make it sound either, you know, bang it harder or softer.
No, that's not possible. Not with bells. One strike on a bell is a strike on a bell, and a carillonaire can make it louder or softer, but with electronic solenoid striker, that's not possible.
Okay, let's build up how you actually make a recording. Say I come to you and we've just bought a carillon from your company. Mm-hmm. Just suppose that I can play the organ, but I can't play the carillon. Can you help me?
Yeah, of course. If you can play an organ and you know that the range of bells of the carillon, you know it where it's on a normal synthesizer, you can play a song. We record it and we can prepare that melody so that it can be played on our carillon station.
So that's the reason for the organ in the corner?
Yes, and modern, the synthesizer in the other corner.
Okay, on our left we've got the synthesizer you've just mm-hmm. described. We've also got, on our right, the electronic organ. Now, what I'm looking for, and I don't see, is a tape recorder. Instead, in the middle, I see a computer.
Yeah, that's the old tape recorder is replaced by modern computers. So we record digitally. So there is no reason to use tape of any kind. We first store it in the computer itself, in its fluid memory. After that, we get it out of the computer and program it in an EEPROM, a small chip. And that chip can be sent all over the world to the carillon stations. They put it in the carillon station and they hear the song.
So in other words, if I buy a carillon now and I get tired of the tune, I can update it?
Yes, anytime.
Do a lot of people do that?
Yes, we've got carillons in Japan. We don't hear of them in 5-6 years, and after that time they send us a letter or by fax. They ask for, could you make that melody for us, because we want some update.
Right, well, moving over here, I can see one of these chips that you've got. Actually, it's quite large.
Yes, that's just to handle it, because if it would be as small as the actual size of the chip, you can't handle it. It's the size of a match head.
Right. In fact, on the top of the chip, just looking at it now more closely, in fact, there's a little window, and inside?
Yes.
That's the actual chip, is it?
Yes, because melodies once programmed in this kind of chip, you also can erase it. We can use those chips again. They have to be lying under ultraviolet light for about 20 minutes, then we got one clean chip, just like a new cassette tape.
Right, now we've got the computer in front of us. Yes. Maybe you can call up one of the tunes, because you've got to test it, of course, having recorded it.
Of course, of course.
Now, unlike most computer enthusiasts, not many people have a carillon actually standing outside their house or standing outside the building. In fact, there's one. How many bells in that one that I can see through the window?
47.
47.
Yes.
All right, well, I'll just go over and open the window, and then maybe in the meantime you can call up one of the tunes.
Okay, I do. Okay.
I'm actually chosen quite a windy day today.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what are you going to play for us?
A strange song, actually. It's specially arranged for a customer in Germany. He heard the sound of the song Don't Worry, Be Happy on radio, and he wanted to play it on his carillon. So we asked our carillonneur, please make an arrangement of that song. So he did his best, and that's what we're going to hear. Thank you.
Do you get many requests for pop music then on Carillion?
No, not as much, but some of the old pop classics we do, of course.
But you're limited, I guess, by the tempo, aren't you? You can't play it too fast.
Yes, that's correct. We can go pretty fast, but not too fast.
Good. Now, next to the computer, there's one more piece of apparatus, a black box connected to a telephone. What's that for?
That's for receiving or sending songs to our Carillionaire, because he lives about 180 kilometers away from Aalrijksel, from this place. So we don't have to come over and over a few times a week.
So how does it work then? Because you say you've got to program, what, hundreds of tunes a year?
Yeah. Our Carillionaire in Maassluis, he plays it at home in his own computer.
What is it, a synthesizer?
A synthesizer, yes. Then he calls me, and I'm going in receiving mode, as you would say. And he sends his songs to me. Well, that's done in a few minutes, and I've got 20, 30 melodies.
And he's sending that to you in the digital form?
Yes, in digital form.
So-called MIDI
yes.
format?
In MIDI format, yeah, that's correct. And then we receive it in our computer system.
Okay, let's have another song, because in fact Radio Netherlands uses, as an interval signal at the start of our transmissions, a song called Merk Toch Hysterik. Have you got that on your system?
Yes, of course.
Okay, let's hear it. For the final part of our tour, we've come to the foundry floor to see how the bells are tuned. In fact, although the bells are massive, the process of tuning is very delicate. And because you have to cut away the metal at strategic points inside the bell to tune it, you only get one chance. If you cut away too much, the entire bell has to be recast. If you tap the bell with a hammer at different points, you can also get different sounds, even different notes, like this. Jan Zuidervaart again.
I told you that there are a number of notes, different notes in the bell which have to be tuned. And he now sticks his microphone to a place the bell is hit, and the frequencies are shown on an electronic device which is in that small room.
Mind you, he's only got one chance, has he? Because he can only take metal off, he can't put metal back.
Yeah, that's correct, yeah. That's if you are unlucky, you could carve away too much, and then you could start all over again.
But how did they manage to tune the bells before the electronic apparatus you've got here?
Then they used the tuning forks. 100 years ago, approximately, they were just ordinary tuning forks. Later on, they were adjustable, so that they could, with one fork, tune several notes in one bell. Before that time, the tuning was even more simple. They just cut off some pieces inside the bell from what the tuner thought he could do. But the result was terrible, of course. It was not nice. We nowadays see bells, say, of 400 or 500 years ago, looking fantastic at the outside, but when you look at the inside, you see all kind of holes, but just metal has been cut away.
And there's nothing you can do to change them? I mean,
no, most of the time not, no.
So, a case of nice looks, shame about the sound. Well, that's all in this profile of bell-making in the 90s. My thanks to Jan Zuidervaart and Rian Kuipers from Petit & Fritsen for showing us round, to Eddie Zander and Robert Horseman for getting the sound balance right on what's turned out to be rather a windy day, a Carillion recordist's nightmare, I can assure you. Anyway, from all of us, have an enjoyable week.
Marks on Mechanics was produced and presented by Jonathan Marks for Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International Service.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.